Niner Gang. Bang, bang, Niner Gang.
Live and local, it's bang, bang, the Drive Guys. Watch the show on YouTube.com/SacktownSports1140.
Or listen on the Sacktown Sports app.
Bang, bang, Niner Gang. This is by request from a Kyle Draper. Wanted to hear this song again, right?
I'm fine with it. The trash talk has ceased. I'll talk to you after the playoffs.
Okay.
I'm not going to poke the bear anymore. I'll let the play on the field do the talking. Talk to you in January and February.
We're coming to you from the Golden 1 Center where the Kings are taking on the Nets tonight. We've got more on just how impressive the 49er offense was yesterday. But before we get to that, you know, it was a crazy weekend, and Kyle just came across, sports-wise, and Kyle just came across an interesting footnote on Shohei Ohtani's deal. Remember, we were talking Friday, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised so many Giants fans are like, oh, we didn't get Ohtani. The Giants were not going to get Ohtani, and he was going to the Dodgers
all along. That, right, we said that on Friday. I mean, the Dodgers were really the only team that made sense from a financial standpoint, from a history standpoint.
It's where he wanted to go all along.
And this is the kind of move that the Dodgers make. It's sort of like I said before. It's like the Lakers always getting the big man, LeBron, getting Shaq. You know, the Dodgers always get their guy. And so, no, this hurts, man. He signed that big deal, $700 million. We're getting some details here, Whitey, about that deal. Jeff Passan saying Shohei's $700 million contract calls for him to be paid only $2 million a year for the next 10 seasons, with $680 million deferred until the end of the deal, sources telling ESPN. And SpotRack, a great site for,
business salaries, contracts. Yeah.
Shohei will earn $20 million from 2024 to 2033, then will earn $680 million from 2034 to 2040.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
The only reason I'd question that, not the validity of it, but just the wisdom of
it.
We were just in Japan. The dollar's doing really well there.
Is it really?
It's a good time
to
spend your U.S. money
right.
in Japan, but I'm sure he's
That's a
I'm
lot
sure
to be
fine.
Deferred.
Like, yeah,
think about it. That's insane.
Uh-huh.
You're deferring $68 million per year. Think about that.
As crazy as that contract is, $700 million. To me, he earned it. It still makes more sense to me than Jackson Hayes getting $500,000 for going, good shot, LeBron. Right?
Ouch, that's messed up. Where's Jackson Hayes at when you know? No, I hear you, but does it make that much sense in that market with that team? For instance, the Dodgers, you're the Dodgers. Now, if you go to, I don't know, Milwaukee or a smaller market, then that raises the entire value of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, can the Dodgers get their return on that? That's a great question though, right?
I think they can though. I think because my understanding is now they can sell the rights to their games in Japan now.
Yeah, that's true.
They got Shohei, and the manager
right.
is from Okinawa. It's
right,
they can sell their games. And, you know, also from a competitive standpoint, you keep them from going someplace else.
Yeah, I get it, yeah.
But I'll bet they do. I bet they do find a way to make money.
Yeah, you're right. And the Ohtani Dodger jersey,
that'll
be the number one jersey, clearly, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be huge.
Mm-hmm. But as for the Giants, I know some people look at Farhan and it's Farhan's fault. It's like you can blame Farhan for a lot of things if you wanted to, but this he had no chance on this. So for the Giants, I think it was a matter of, all right, how do we play it? Do we say we don't want him, or do we say, oh, yeah, we're in, and then not get him? And I think the best way to play it of those two is say that you're in,
right?
Because then at least people can't go, you didn't even try to get him.
Right.
Because they knew they weren't going to get him either way.
Yeah, if you don't even try to get him, that's almost a fireable offense, you know,
right.
in the mind of a fan base.
He went to the Dodgers and you didn't even try.
You let him. You just let him walk over to the Dodgers just like that. And so, no, you're right. But they got to do something. They need, talking about the Giants, they need a face of the franchise. They need an identity. I don't know who the Giants are right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Fans are really disillusioned, and the Giants need to make some noise this offseason just to get people interested again. Those people right now, though, Bay Area sports fans, Northern California sports fans, very interested in a 49er team yesterday that destroyed Seattle. Which of these four numbers do you, Kyle? I know you were there yesterday.
Yep, I was there.
Really says the most about how good the offense was yesterday. One, the 49er offense registered 527 total yards, most yards in a single game this season, and the most San Francisco's registered since they beat the Saints in 2019 when they had 516 yards. 527 total yards. We also have this. Number two, 49er offense averaged 9.9 yards per play. That's the team's highest average yards per play.
First down per play, basically.
Yeah. 9.9 yards per play. How about Brock Purdy? 368 passing yards. Ayuk, 126 receiving yards. Debo, 149 receiving yards. McCaffrey, 145 rushing yards. 49ers, the first team to have at least one player with 300 or more passing yards, two players with 100 more receiving yards, and one player with 100 or more rushing yards in the same game since the Ravens in, 2022. By the way, before we get any further, here's Brock Purdy and all the weapons he has at his disposal.
I'm a part of a special group, you know. Any one of our guys, any one of our eligibles, man, you get the ball in their hands and then they can go do the rest. You know, break tackles, obviously have pull away, breakaway speed. I mean, we see it every game. So to throw like a 5-yard pass or even a deep ball, it doesn't matter. We got playmakers.
Boy, didn't he get you fired up? What a Brock Purdy.
He proved my point. That's what I've been saying all season. All he got to do is just get it out there. Whether it's 5 or 30, those guys make the plays and go.
Fourth and finally, the 49ers scored a touchdown on their opening possession for the 8th time this season. And they've scored an NFL high 59 points on the opening possession of games this season. 59 points on opening possessions. Second most points scored by an NFL team on opening possessions through 13 games since at least 2000. To me, that's the most impressive.
That's impressive that they can opening drive, march down, and get on the board.
Yeah. Because as everybody knows, all right, they're coming for us. That first drive is really important. Obviously, they script their first whatever number of plays it is, and they still are unstoppable.
Yeah, and already the team is playing from behind, you know, the opponent.
Yeah.
So that's up there. You know, for me, it's the 9.9 yards per play. I mean,
that's pretty incredible.
It's a first down, basically, every time you snap the ball. Mm-hmm. Think about that.
Yeah.
Like, that's unheard of. It was a potent beatdown, I think. The score says 28-16. The game wasn't that close to me. Like, I thought the Niners controlled that game, even right from the opening kick. I mean, you know, opening first snap. And to get 9.9 yards per play, that's just it's a first down per play. It's unbelievable. But, no, it goes to your point about the scoring the first touchdown, scoring first in nine games?
Touchdown on their opening possession, eighth time this season. Yeah, 59 points on the opening possession.
That's so critical to what they do. Not saying that they can't come back or any, because we've seen them come back somewhat. But when they march down the field and score a touchdown on their first drive, that changes the tenor of the game. And so then that puts the pressure on the opposition. And think about it, too, like this. Let's say the opponent gets the ball first. In the first half, you get a 3-and-out. Then you get a score. You're up 7-0, and you get the ball to start the second half. You know, they put so much pressure on you. And that's the thing about the Niners. They're relentless. You may be able to hold them down for a quarter and a half, but we haven't seen too many times a team do it the entire game, other than that three-game stretch where they struggled a little bit and they were banged up.
Yeah. Charvarius Ward got hurt yesterday, groin, and, you know, that's the thing for a defensive back. Who knows? Maybe he bounces right back from that. Maybe that lingers, and they're already without Hufanga. So, I mean, that's a little concerning going forward. But as I said earlier, to me, it was really impressive the way the 49ers, they were kind of struggling at times to get the rhythm, and then, boom, they hit on a big play.
Yeah.
Struggling, kind of, what's going on? And then, boom, they hit on another big play.
And they're the ultimate snowball team, meaning once it gets rolling downhill, it just picks up steam, and there's nothing you could. We saw it last week against the Eagles. The Eagles held them in that first quarter, but then, what was it, four or five straight touchdowns for the Niners? They are a juggernaut right now. And so I wonder if you're, you know, whether it's Eagles, Dallas, what kind of team can beat the Niners? Like, do you try and outscore them in a shootout 40 to Or do you have to have a Cleveland Browns kind of defense? Some, you know, muck it up, you know, hold them to 14, 17, 21 kind of points. Because I don't know if you can get into a shootout with these guys.
No, I mean, you know, it's flip of the coin.
Yeah.
But if you do that. But I think, yeah, you do have to have an excellent defense. And also, and I know this is football 1A, but you got to be able to run the ball and keep their offense on the sidelines as much as you can.
Yes.
Get a lead somehow, some way. With a defense that's able to keep them from getting into the rhythm. I think the Cleveland game is a great example.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were trying to figure out how to beat the 49ers, that'd be my blueprint. I'd try to follow that as much as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they did that with a terrible quarterback.
A terrible quarterback, yep. You run the ball.
Joe Flacco, by the way, the new quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
I'd say the Cleveland Browns, to me, are the best story in the NFL. Four different quarterbacks having won a game for them this season. They got the inside track, I believe, on a playoff spot. As well, and so they're the best story, I think, in the NFL right now. And what they've been able to do, we hear so often about the quarterback position being the most important position in all of sports. And the Cleveland Browns are like, hey, whoever we throw out there, 80-year-old Joe Flacco, it doesn't matter. You know,
we're he was stealing yesterday.
He was. Well, he had like 300-some yards, a couple of touchdowns. He looked great yesterday.
See, that shows you how bad quarterbacking is this year. A lot of it, I think, is because of injuries. You know what I mean? I mean, some of the guys that you look at that, like we said, the 3-0 game in Las Vegas, and Joe Flacco comes in and is like, I can do this,
can
and
do
he's
this.
Better than half the guys that are playing in the league right now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at it, a lot of times we're seeing young guys being thrown right into the fire. Remember back in the day, you used to have draft a first-round quarterback.
Hold the clipboard.
Hold the clipboard, learn 2 or 3 years, then we turn it over to you. We saw with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. That happened with him.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, I think you got it's totally different. You draft a quarterback in the first round, he's starting day one, taking his lumps. And we're seeing the quality of quarterback play go down, I think.
I wonder if that's one of the big reasons why quarterbacks taken later tend to do better, because the guys taken early are taken by bad teams
at
the top of the draft.
Right.
And, all right, save us, whereas guys taken later, they have the opportunity to kind of work their way into the lineup, sometimes with better teams.
You're 100% right about that, because when you look at it, you know, we see it in the NBA as well. You know, a guy like Keegan Murray, he can come in and just be a part of it. He doesn't have to be the franchise savior. When you're a number one pick, look at Richardson out there in the Colts. I know he's banged up. You know, Stroud's doing great, obviously. He got hurt yesterday. But when you're one of those high picks, usually the cupboards are bare.
Look at, like, Zach Wilson.
Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
Exactly. The cupboards are bare.
Compared to Brock Purdy, for example.
Compared to Brock Purdy. I mean, think about that. I mean, if you took any of those high, you know, caliber quarterbacks, high drafted quarterbacks, throw them in this Niners system with this talent, I'm not saying they'd be the same as Brock, but they wouldn't be as bad as what we're seeing this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. When we come right back, is Brock Purdy the MVP this season? Who cares? Tell you why, it's really not that big a deal for the 49ers when we come right back to the Golden One Center to Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.
The Drive Guys, live and local, every afternoon, Monday through Friday on Sacktown Sports.
Drive Guys at the Golden One Center. The Kings taking on the Nets tonight. Interesting, we've got some suggestions today in The Athletic that the Kings may be in on someone like Pascal Siakam. We'll get to that. Again, the reporting is a little iffy. It's not a rumor that the Kings have been talking to the Raptors. It's more, hey, a lot of people think things may go this way. So we'll look at that and whether it makes sense for the Kings and what there may be to it. But first, I wanted to address, Kyle Draper, this Brock Purdy MVP thing. And I really, ultimately, is he going to be the MVP? He might be. I doubt it, because I still think, you know, someone like Dak has a little more cachet. But I don't think it matters for a couple reasons. One is, with the 49ers and quarterbacks, the ring is the thing.
Yeah.
That's what matters.
Right. That's what matters.
Yeah. The other thing is, in the NFL, to me, the MVP of the NFL, it's obviously a great honor. It means less than the NBA MVP or Major League Baseball's MVP, in my opinion, because it's basically a quarterback award.
It is a quarterback award, and usually it's the quarterback on the best team kind of award, too. You know, it's, I mean, when you look at Tyreek Hill and what he's doing, I could argue.
Yep.
He should be MVP.
Yeah.
You take him off that team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know if the Dolphins are, you know, 9-3 or whatever they are right now. I mean, and what he's doing. This is a guy that could have 2,000 receiving yards, never seen before,
never done.
In the NFL. And if he can't get it doing that,
right?
I mean, what are we doing then? You know?
I'm with you. Yeah. The other side of that coin is, well, who threw him the ball?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, and it's always.
Well, let me ask you this, though, and let's have this Brock Purdy conversation. When you look at Debo, Ayuk, CMC, those guys would be great, I think, no matter what, who was throwing them the ball. Conversely, would Purdy be great? You see, and this is why I'm talking. I'm just talking MVP discussion.
Right.
This is that's going to be the knock for against Brock
yeah.
Purdy. This is why he, you know, may not get it.
I think that holds some Gatorade, but I also think it's true that you take any one of those guys, let's just say Ayuk, your guy Ayuk, mm-hmm. tremendous route runner, great receiver. He's not going to be as effective on another team that doesn't have McCaffrey and Debo. Still going to be effective, but I think that holds true not just for Purdy, but for all of them, because they have so many different weapons. And it's
like
so hard to scheme for them.
Right, right.
That's one of the reasons they score so often on the first possession, because a defense can't take all those guys away.
And when you do take one away, like we saw when Debo was out, then it becomes a different kind mm-hmm. of setup there. And so you're right. It's an embarrassment of riches and too many weapons, and you got to pick your poison. And what's great about all those guys talking about Debo and CMC and IU, they're hard to bring down too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not only are they hard to stop in terms of covering them, but when they do have the ball, they're a load to bring down.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Now, here's something I saw over the weekend. Greg Cosell was on with Ross Tucker on his podcast, and he breaks down quarterbacks. And, mm-hmm. you know, before the season started.
Yeah, I get Ross Tucker on. He's my guy.
He's my guy, too. Yeah. He used to be on with us all the time.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. He said, Greg Cosell, before the season started, he said, you know, we haven't seen that much of Purdy yet. We don't know. He played well, but we don't know. But he just said over the weekend, look, there's two things this guy does that no one knew he could do. In college, there was no way to know he could do him. He said, one thing is when defenses switch up late mm-hmm. before a snap, he recognizes it. And Greg Cosell says, in college, teams didn't do that.
Right.
So there's no way of knowing that he was able to recognize
that. Yeah.
College teams don't do that.
Yeah.
So they'll change coverages or schemes, or they'll disguise something right before the snap. And Brock Purdy's like, yeah, I got it. He said the other thing is he throws with so much anticipation, throwing guys open. The ball before the player is there. And he said, Greg Cosell says, in college, you don't have to do that much. The game is different. So he says there's two things Brock Purdy really excels in that we didn't even know that he could do coming out of college.
Yeah, and that's 100% right. When you watch Brock Purdy, you know, his ability to throw guys open over the middle, too. I mean, there are sometimes and is that vision? Is that, like, is that
it's like
trust
an anticipation.
In your, like,
yeah.
anticipation? What is that? But I also add a third thing that's impressed me about Brock Purdy. His ability, when the play breaks down, to scramble and still throw a strike on the run. A lot of times it's risky. We understand that, you know. But some of the throws he makes on the run are dimes, man, and that's impressed me. And so, yeah, I'm saying something positive about Brock Purdy here. And so he's not all bad. And so, no, everything
that's
you just said.
Nice to say. After he threw for 368, he's not all bad.
But I'm telling you, from what I'm seeing, I'm being objective here, Whitey. I'm trying to be objective.
I know.
Give this guy some credit. You know, like I said, the only way to stop this Niners offense and Brock Purdy is to actually get to him.
Yeah.
Because if you don't get to him, or if he buys a little time with it, it's too late. And so go back to the Cleveland game. Go back to some of these games we saw. A lot of tip balls, you know, they made life difficult for him. If you can't do that, Eagles couldn't generate a pass rush. Seahawks couldn't generate a pass rush. They'll pick you apart.
And there's one guy that we didn't mention
that
we should have when we were talking about all their weapons. And we mentioned Ayuk, we mentioned Debo, McCaffrey, Kittle, Purdy, and it's Trent Williams. And Trent Williams is so dominant over there that you just see, you know, like, give it to McCaffrey, we're running left. And he just destroys people.
And
also you got Kittle over there,
and
then you got Juszczyk. And that's another reason why it's a really difficult team to stop.
And that's one thing I witnessed in person yesterday. the love and respect for Trent Williams among the fan base. They got so many weapons, so many great skill position players, but the loudest ovation was for Trent Williams when he came out yesterday. Mm-hmm. And that kind of surprised me. Usually it's the quarterback or the running back, wide receiver. No, Trent Williams, that fan base identifies with him. And I ask, who's the face? He's one of them.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
It's awfully hard, if not impossible, to quantify. But, I mean, you got guys on his team that say he's the greatest left tackle of all time.
Yes. Hall of Famer. Yes. Mm-hmm. You're 100% right.
Yeah. So that's another thing that makes that offense go. And remember when they lost three games in a row, he wasn't there.
He wasn't there.
Huge, huge difference. But as far as MVP with Brock Purdy, it's an incredible story that it's even being talked about. I doubt ultimately that he wins it, but that's not the thing for 49er fans. It's, you're a 49er quarterback, you got to be about winning those rings and winning a Super Bowl.
I agree, but let me ask you this. Given everything that's been discussed regarding Brock Purdy, last player taken, Rodney Dangerfield of the league, people aren't respecting what he's done. That would be the icing on the cake, the carrot on top, an MVP. If he wins an MVP, there can't be any more discussion, right?
There can be. I don't think there should be, but it'll be, has he won?
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Well, that's fine, but has he actually won anything? There's still the one thing that people will still cling to, like I have to tell you this, has he ever led them from behind? He hasn't had to do a lot of that.
He hasn't had to do a lot.
He kind of did it in Cleveland, but they missed the field goal. So that's still one of the things. And then, of course, has he won a Super Bowl? Which is one of those stupid things. It's like, I think it's dumb in the NBA. We talk about all-time great players. Well, how many rings did he win? I mean, that's important, but is it really the be-all, end-all? For some reason, with quarterbacks, it is.
It is.
And I don't think it should be.
It is. I mean, look at Donovan McNabb.
Yeah.
And look at his career.
Yeah.
I think he should be a Hall of Famer. I think he's had a great career, but he never won that ring, and that's the knock. And I'm looking at the text line here. Somebody from the 510 says, and I think this is tongue-in-cheek, still need to see Brock and the gang play in a muddy or snow game with wind and rain.
Okay.
They might not need that, though.
Right.
You got home field throughout.
Yeah.
And you're playing in Allegiant. Like, I don't know if we need to see that.
But that's going to be tough now that they got the inside track. If something happens, they stumble, they don't end up with home field, that's going to be tough.
That's going to be tough.
Yeah, the Ravens would be the big stumbling block there, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. But, you've already went to Philly and won, but let's just say you stumble a little bit and have to go to Philly again in January.
I don't know. Philly's a wild card team right now, Kyle. I don't see the number one seed in the conference having to play on the road against a wild card team.
10-3 is 10-3.
I don't think that's how it works.
During the regular season, 10-3 is 10-3. Now, if we were 17 games in, you could say that. But right now, 10-3 is 10-3.
Mm-hmm. And you're behind the Cowboys.
I know.
Yeah.
That hurts.
That's didn't see that one coming. Your defense. What's wrong with the Eagles' defense? Where is it?
No pass rush. Linebackers banged up.
Bad.
Yeah, linebackers are bad. Secondary's bad. It's a bad defense right now.
We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, ready to start talking about some basketball?
Yeah, let's get into Kings, baby.
Yeah, let's
talk about
what's going on with the Kings. The Kings could be in position to make a big move. Why some people expect them to knock on the door of a big-name star. When we come right back to the Gold One Center, Drive Guys with you on Sacktown Sports.
On the move? Got somewhere to be?
Take Sacramento Kings basketball with you. The Sacktown Sports app will let you stay connected to your passion. Never miss a moment of Sacramento Kings basketball with the Sacktown Sports app. Your afternoon home for Kings talk and so much more. The Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.
Oh, and so much more. Speaking of the Kings, getting ready to take on the Nets. Got the Drive Guys here, Kyle Draper and Whitey Gleason. We have news today from The Athletic. The Kings have been linked to possible trade talks involving the Toronto Raptors, Pascal Siakam, and OG Anunoby. We'll get to that in just a moment. What does it mean? What's really there? Before we do, the Kings have made an acquisition today to their broadcast team. Kyle Draper, we understand, and Ramona Shelburne's tweeting about it. Chelsea Gray joining the Kings broadcast team.
Yeah, and this is huge because she's a WNBA star, a current player in the WNBA.
And you said you could take her in a low post.
I'd give her some elbows. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I would not take it easy on her. That's for sure. She would have to play hard against me. She'd kick my butt probably.
Uh-huh.
But she would have to earn it. That's for sure. And so I'm looking at her resume, and, you know, she's a three-time WNBA champ, five-time WNBA All-Star, Olympic gold medalist. She also works for the ACC Network. And so she's a finals MVP under her belt as well. And so the fact that we, you know, can bring in not only a big name like Chelsea, but a current player as well, I think it's going to add to the broadcast. So her first night is tonight at 6:30 on NBC Sports California.
It's great. And I know a lot of people who've been here a long time are still hoping that someday, hopefully soon, we have a WNBA team playing here at the Golden One Center.
Yeah, yeah. What happened to the Monarchs was, you know, criminal, if you will. And that's the thing. We know Sacramento can support it. This is a basketball crazed city, and they supported the Monarchs when they were here. And
yep.
So hopefully we see that happen again.
Now, what are we to make of this? We have Shams Sreeni, of course, in The Athletic. Here's what he wrote today. Quote, teams such as the Hawks, Kings, and Pacers are expected suitors for Siakam or Anunoby, but believe Siakam appears to be the likelier player to be dealt, league sources tell The Athletic. And they go. He goes on from there to talk about some of the numbers, what Siakam's making. He says, for the Kings, a better start to this season than a year ago provides confidence that they can grow internally rather than compete for the expected cost of talents such as Siakam and Anunoby. Pardon me. What do you make of just this on the surface? The Kings are believed to be expected suitors for Siakam.
I think that, you know, as a Kings fan, I would welcome that. Obviously, what do you have to give up? But the fact that Monty McNair is making phone calls, is working the phones, is knocking on doors, is kicking the tires, shows to me that as great as the Kings are playing now, a much better season, not much better, but they're on a better clip than they were last season. Monty knows there's still room for this team to grow. Now, Shams, like you said, did say that the Kings, you know, better start to this season versus last season leads them to believe that possibly the growing internally could be the way to go. And so that's a conundrum because, you know, Pat Riley used to say, you got to strike when the iron's hot. You know, you get the talent and figure out everything else later. And so if you're Sacramento, when you look around the landscape of the Western Conference, Whitey, and I'm going to throw this at you, Denver, they're not going anywhere anytime soon. Minnesota, they're legit, it looks like. Then you got OKC. And so are you okay, and I'm asking Kings fans this, with taking the slow route? Because you might get passed by these teams I just mentioned, the Minnesotas and the OKCs of the world.
I know our friend Alan Stiles was talking about this potential deal today, and he said that in his mind there's no way the Kings could make this deal or a deal for one of these guys without parting with Keegan Murray. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think when you look at the price tag that's been established for some of these guys, you look at what the Jazz did for Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, basically it was like they set the price tag at four number ones for these guys, right?
Yeah, you got it.
Well, yeah, these two guys, Siakam and Anunoby, they're going to be free agents. So I would think that, look, let's be reasonable. You're not going to get four number ones for guys that might not be around, but maybe a couple number ones. I don't know. I think, bottom line, the Kings could probably find a way, and you know, Alan may be right, but I think they probably could keep Keegan, but they would have to give up a lot of draft capital to have a shot at one of these guys, especially if they're competing with other teams.
Right. And like you said, it could be only for a rental as well.
Yeah.
And so you need to know that going in that you're going to have these guys, you know, beyond this year, obviously. But I'm looking at the Atlanta Hawks. They were mentioned as well. I'm looking at the Atlanta Hawks and what they could offer. A DeAndre Hunter they could throw into the mix. Shoot, if they wanted, they could throw in a DeJounte Murray. If they want it. And so what kind of package outside of Keegan, player-wise, could the Kings
offer? Would have to be, let's face it, guys that you probably see as nothing against Harrison Barnes, but as a guy that, hey, if you could move Harrison, bring in a two-time All-Star to play his position, you would do right. that. So it'd probably be something like Harrison, Davion. It would be tough to match an offer of a team like the Hawks if the Hawks were, in fact, it just wouldn't be worth it for a rental.
Right, and with Siakam making, what, $38 million, I think it is,
$37 million. That's right, $37.9 million.
So you got to come, you know, within 25% of that, if I'm correct. And so, you know, you're talking about, you know, you got to have $30 million in salary, $33 million maybe in salary. You throw Harrison Barnes, who's at 17. You know, it's going to be a number of players just to get to the salary. And I think if you're Toronto, you don't make any kind of move unless you get at least two draft picks for Pascal Siakam.
Yeah, and another thing as I look at this, Bob Myers told me once, he said, words matter. Mm. And you look at the words involved here. These teams are expected suitors for Siakam. We don't even really know that this is the case. When right. Sham says these teams are expected suitors, league sources tell us, what that tells me is that you've got GMs, personnel people around the league that talk to Shams and say, you know what, I'll bet Sacramento would be in on that guy.
Right.
And they
right.
may be right.
Right.
But that's all that really is.
Yes.
It's guessing. It's people that are somewhat educated as to how this works, saying, I'll bet you the Kings would be in on that guy. I don't think anybody really knows that.
Yeah, we don't know that, but he did say, and I'm looking for it here in the report, that the Kings have had talks, like have made calls, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Have engaged is the word.
Well, last year in the offseason, we know that they really looked into these things, right?
The Pacers and Kings have both checked in and engaged at different points with Toronto over the last year.
Yeah.
So we know there's some interest there. But I think we're a long ways away from something getting done.
Yeah.
When you look at it, think about it. He mentions Atlanta, Indiana. What about the Philadelphia 76ers? They got some assets, too,
mm-hmm.
they can move. Draft picks that they got in the James Harden deal. They got some players as well. And so if I'm Philly, that's the kind of move I'm going out there to make, because you're going for it right now. Sacramento, you bring in a Pascal Siakam right now. Let me ask you, Whitey, how much closer does that move you to winning the championship? Pascal.
It might move me closer, two-time All-Star, but he needs a lot of shots. I think it would take a long time.
Right.
His GM after last year, Masai Ujiri, said of Siakam, you know, some of our players were kind of selfish last year.
Mm.
Fair enough, but do I really want to gamble, take that big of a risk for a guy? And it was one thing for the Kings to talk about him and look in to acquiring him last year. Now you're not even talking about a full season.
Right.
If you got him last year or during the summer, you'd have a full season. I don't think it adds up. They'll check in on it. I think the price tag's going to be too high. The only way I could see the Kings really being in on this, I could be totally wrong, is if ownership says, you know what? This is it. We got to make a run. I want to get one of these guys. I don't know that would be prudent. It would be very exciting. Right. I have no reason to think that's where it is. But short of that, I don't think it makes sense for the Kings to jump in with both feet on there.
I agree with you. I like Pascal as a player. But we have to declare, what is our goal? It's not just to make the playoffs. It's to win a championship. And if you bring in Pascal at $37 million and then have to re-sign him as well, that's your team. I went back and I looked, Whitey, and I thought about this. To win a championship, you got to have a top five guy in the NBA. Steph Curry, the Joker, LeBron, Giannis. You could go back Tatum. You could go down the list. And so, to me, what the Kings need, either A, De'Aaron Fox to be that guy, or B, to go out there and get that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Pascal Siakam's that guy.
No, I don't think so either, and I like him. But as far as trading Keegan in one of these deals, there's no way. I have no interest in trading Keegan right now.
Right.
Because we don't know
what he could be. Like, his ceiling, he hasn't even scratched what he could be. You're talking about a guy that could be a tremendous two-way player. We're seeing him play defense this year. We know he can knock down shots, and so I'm with you. You don't trade the number 4 overall pick for Pascal Siakam, as two-time All-Star, great of a player he is.
Spicy P,
because he's not bringing you a championship. He's not moving you that close. Now, Keegan Murray, in a year or two, could be better than Pascal.
Right.
And so
right.
I wouldn't do that. You know, I'm looking at the YouTube chat. Beamer, Beams, or Beamly says Fox is a top five. I don't know. I don't think he's there yet. I think, you know, what comes with being a top five player is doing it when it matters the most, and that's in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And so can he get there? Yes. Can he put this team on his back? Yes, but we need to see it before we crown him that, I think.
Yeah, Beamer Beams or Beamly says Kings need a post scorer, a true power forward. Pascal is kind of that guy. He needs a lot of shots. He'd throw a lot of things. You'd have to make a lot of adjustments to bring him in. I would have zero interest also in, as I said, trading Keegan for him. You just touched on it, Kyle. To me, Keegan Murray is not getting the credit he deserves around here for how well he's defending, how hard he's working on defense. There's lots of things you can use to measure defense, and it's hard. You got defensive box plus minus and offensive rating, defensive rating, and I don't know. You can use those to slice things a number of ways. But when you watch how hard he works right now defending the other team's best scorer, just go back to Friday, watching him navigate around screens to try to stay in front of Devin Booker. He's working really hard on defense, and he's playing some really good defense too.
No, he is. He's playing lights out defense. You know, he has that size and length at 6'8". To be able to guard multiple positions.
He's got the total buy-in defensively.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it may be hampering his offense a little bit. But I think what Mike Brown is doing, and I'm not going to call it an experiment, but we know Keegan can score the ball. We've seen it before. Now the development comes in being a two-way player. And that's what Mike Brown is asking him. And so it may take some time. It may take some lumps. You know, when I look at Keegan Murray, this is one thing, you know, we talked about before the season, going into the season, is the number of shot attempts for Keegan Murray. When I look at his box score, his stat line last season, Keegan took 9.8 shots per game. This year, he's at 12.4. I honestly would like to see that up around 14 or 15 shots per game. And so I think he needs to be more aggressive offensively.
You know, that actually could actually be contributing to his shooting declining, too, which I'll explain what I mean by that in just a second. We'll come right back. The Kings in a potential trade involving Siakam, Ananobi, are they better off standing pat, or is it time to jump in on a big deal with both feet? That's next here from the Golden One Center with the Drive Guys, Kyle Draper, Whitey Gleason, Sac Town Sports.
Live and local, it's the Drive Guys. Watch the show on youtube.com/SacktownSports1140.
Or listen on the Sacktown Sports app.
What have we known and how long have we known it? Drive Guys at the Golden One Center. And yes, as you know, the Kings taking on the Brooklyn Nets tonight, wearing the City Edition uniforms, those sharp royal blues with the Kings coming right down vertically.
Yes.
Kind of a cool look, kind of a throwback to the
I like it, yeah. And I saw, you know, because we get here super early, outside the team store, I saw a stack of De'Aaron Fox jerseys. I'm like, man, those are nice.
Yeah. Yeah, when I get here, sometimes a guy is putting the names on the backs of the jerseys.
Yeah. I'm like, they should just hook us up, right?
I know.
We should get one, man. Seriously, who do we need to talk to about that?
We shouldn't have to talk to anybody.
That's true.
Yeah. But we are talking about the Kings and a potential deal. Hold on here. Now, we don't really know much, but The Athletic is reporting that, quote, teams such as the Hawks, Kings, and Pacers are expected suitors for Siakam or Ananobi, but believe Siakam appears to be the likelier player to be dealt, league sources tell The Athletic. And Shams Trini also says, for the Kings, a better start to this season than a year ago provides confidence that they can grow internally rather than compete for the expected cost of talent such as Siakam and Ananobi. So what do you think? Some comments here on the chat we have from Caesar916. Giving up future draft capital and our bench is, sorry, these are jumping all over the place here. We're getting so many. Is not worth the rental. That's pretty much how I feel about it. If you had any guarantee that you would be able to keep him, maybe. But even then, you're not sure that after Pascal Siakam was here for half a year that you'd even want him back.
Right, exactly. And then you give away your draft capital, you trade players. for a guy that doesn't put you over the hump. And, you know, this is an interesting decision for Monty McNair in terms of which direction does he go. For instance, Whitey, I'm looking at the text line right now, and someone from the 916 says, Drapes, Fox definitely looks like that guy. Clutch player of the year, played great in the playoffs last year. If the bar is doing it in the playoffs, he hasn't had the opportunity yet other than last year. And he showed against the Warriors that he is that level. He's the reason they were as competitive as they were against the Warriors. If some of the other guys that didn't step up, basically. But then the very next comment, someone else says, you can't construct this roster with kid gloves for a team that just lost in the first round to an aging Warriors team. Being scared to pull the trigger on a big name because we're scared of protecting this feel-good beam team is just sad to me. Scared money don't make money.
That's not the point, though. It's not about, oh, we don't want to break up this team. It's you don't want to bring in a guy who is going to be very expensive. Someone on the chat is asking, yeah, 38
for
1 year, then try to re-sign him. You don't know if you'll get him back. I mean, you could just be putting a huge hole in this thing. It's not like, oh, we're scared to break up the team. It would be a huge risk to bring in a guy like Siakam. You'd have to give up a lot to get him, and you don't know how long you'd have him.
Let me ask you this, though, because I hear that, and I agree 100% with you, but let's look at the flip side, because Sham said it in his report, that maybe they want to, you know, play the slow game, if you will, let this team develop. Is that the right move? Like, it doesn't have to be Siakam or let this team develop. There has to be something else. If there are there some other options out there that can put you over the top? I don't know. Zach LaVine, I don't know if he does it. Caruso, I don't know if he does it. You know, like if that's why I'm saying Monty McNair, whatever he does, he has to get this right. This is a critical time for Sacramento. If he does keep this core intact, lets it grow, he has to make sure Keegan hits the way that he's expecting. And if he does decide to make a move, Siakam has to be the guy. Or whoever he brings in has to be the guy.
I think two perfect fits for this team would be, you mentioned Caruso and Anunoby.
Yeah.
They're big. They would bring you defense. I think your team would be much better right now, dramatically better if you brought them in. With Anunoby, though, again, you don't know how long you'd keep
him.
Siakam, to me, would be the type of move you'd make if you were – let's say you were number one in the West or right up there and you felt like we have a really good team this year. We actually have a shot at a championship. We're very close. Hey, let's roll the dice. Maybe we get one. And I don't think they're there. I don't think it's worth the risk. And I'm not saying that's not a criticism. I think this team is still building up to something. I don't think right now this Kings team is on the cusp of competing for a championship.
Well, let me ask you this then, because I'm thinking about it. Could Siakam be a part of a championship team if De'Aaron Fox takes that leap? Like,
well,
you know what I mean? Like,
he was in Toronto with Kawhi.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, as Kings fans, how should we be looking at this? Are we looking to get somebody that's coming in to be the guy, the 1A to De'Aaron Fox 1? Are we looking for a complimentary piece to be a clear number two? Because De'Aaron Fox, we're 100% sure, is that one.
I just feel like right now, with what Mike Brown is saying, anybody you bring in, they better improve you defensively.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
to me. And with
you need a wing defender, right?
Yeah.
You need somebody.
Yeah.
You know, we're asking Keegan to do that. What do you think about that? Is Keegan that guy, though?
I think he's on his way there. And by the way, I'm glad you reminded me, because we were talking about his offense. And when we talked to Jerry Reynolds about this, when you're on the road or, you know, you got stuff going on, not able to be with us, in Jerry's opinion, one of the things the Kings are asking Keegan to do is take more shots. Mm-hmm. So last year, he only took shots he was comfortable with. Now, obviously, everyone wants him to shoot more. We know that. You can't dispute that that's a good idea. But sometimes he's taken shots that he's not as comfortable with. So that's one reason his shooting numbers are down. He's taken shots this year that last year he would have passed up. So that's one of the things, adjustments that he's trying to figure out right now.
No, you're right about that. And you know, and it's not only that, it's also taking those shots when you got De'Aaron Fox on the floor.
Right.
It's different taking those shots in the California Classic when you're the guy getting your bag and everybody's deferring to you. You have to be able to find those shots, make those shots, take those shots in the flow of being out there with Fox and Herder and Sabonis. And I think he's still trying to find his rhythm, his place when it comes to that as well.
I would be more willing to roll the dice on Anunoby. if I had a chance to get him. I don't think he'd be as expensive. If I had any reason to think, especially if there was any reason to think I might re-sign him. I don't know how that works. I know there's things you can do back channels. You can find out.
Right, right.
A guy, he has no interest
in
going
yeah.
to you. Or maybe you have a shot. If I had any shot at that, I think he would be a great fit. Pascal Siakam brings you potentially, splashier things, bigger numbers,
yeah.
bigger star. But Ananobi brings you exactly what you need on this team.
No, I agree. And when you look at what OG does, we talk about a two-way player. OG Ananobi is listed at 6'7", but he has a 7'2 wingspan. Think about that. We talk about size and length all season long. Oh, the Kings have trouble against teams with size and length. Now you become one of those teams.
Yep.
You got a Keegan Murray out there and an OG Ananobi out there as your 3 and 4. You shrink the floor. I look at the Boston Celtics, and I keep bringing them up because that's the team I know best outside of the Kings. And one of the things that make them so difficult is their size and length, whether it's Porzingis, Tatum, even Jaylen Brown. Like, these guys shrink the floor on you. OG is a floor shrinker defensively. And I think I agree with you. You need something like that in today's NBA.
I know I can plug him in.
Yeah.
And other than a few adjustments here or there, boom, I know what I'm going to get from Pascal Siakam. I got to make a lot of adjustments. It might work out, figuring out how many shots he's going to get, but it might not. So I would rather get Ananobi. But that's something to keep an eye on going forward. When we come back, a look, as promised, at the Lakers. Hey, they're the champ of the in-season tournament. So what? What did they win? That's next year from the Golden 1 Center with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.